its current state on 90.5 WKAR. We are, as you well know, in the midst of our abbreviated fall fundraising campaign here at WKAR. A quick reminder that you are entitled to win. You will have a chance to win tickets to selected performances from the MSU Federal Credit Union Broadway series at Wharton Center if you call in with a contribution today, 517-353-5000. There's a lot of great shows that are a part of this package. Matilda, Roald Dahl's Matilda, The Sound of Music, Bobby McFerrin, Vocalosity, and many others. We hope you will call us. I'm Mark Bayshore. This is Current State on 90.5. At the top of our program, no means no is the phrase commonly associated with consent. However, a growing number of legislators across the country who are concerned with sexual assault say we can do better. They're suggesting a new phrase, yes means yes, also referred to as affirmative consent. Proponents say yes means yes laws go a step further. They say that consent isn't just the absence of a no, it's the presence of a yes. Here in Michigan, our next guest has introduced legislation that would require sex ed courses to expand the conversation involving consent in Michigan schools. Joining us to talk about the bill, one of its sponsors, State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mark.
Great to see you. Explain for us how your bill would ultimately change the conversation in sex ed classrooms.
Yeah, this all started with me meeting with the East Lansing Gender Equality Club, a group of 40 kids that we met on a Tuesday night. I was so impressed to have that many kids that were interested in this kind of issue. That was way back in March. And they really had a lot of issues with the way that we talked about sex ed. And in one of the major issues is the blaming of the victim. And, you know, no means no is fine. I mean, I think we should say no means no. But it doesn't always work that way. If someone's inebriated, if someone's passed out, if someone is too afraid to say no, we need to go beyond that. And so we've drafted our legislation to go into high schools and teach kids affirmative consent as part of the sex ed curriculum. And really, it's pretty simple. And I'd like just to read a little bit from the bill just real quick, if that's
sure.
Okay. You know, affirmative consent means that affirmative, conscious, and voluntary agreement to engage in an act, that it must be obtained by both parties. The lack of protest or resistance does not mean consent. Silence does not mean consent. The existence of a dating or prior sexual relationship should never be itself assumed to be an indicator of consent, and that affirmative consent must be ongoing through the entire encounter and may be revoked at any time. We feel like this is a common sense thing, but obviously is not being part of our culture right now, considering that 1 in 5 women on college campuses are being assaulted right now. We have an epidemic. We need to solve it. We need to change our culture. And I think the best way we can start doing that is by getting to the high schools and teaching kids about affirmative consent.
What's been the response so far among your fellow legislators?
Well, we got a Republican co-sponsor, which is great. I mean, obviously, being in the super minority, ideas don't get done with just Democrats supporting them. So Tanya Schutemaker from the west side of the state has endorsed our bill, and we really appreciate that. Obviously, this has been a major issue for the First Lady. Sue Snyder has talked about the epidemic of sexual assault and has had conferences on that issue. So we think there's a lot of interest in actually looking at different ways of actually attacking this issue. The reality is when you have an epidemic like 1 in 5 people being attacked on a college campus, we're not going to solve that problem with any one bill or any one solution. But I do think changing the culture is part of it. So we're going to continue to push for a hearing on this bill. I have meetings with some key lawmakers in the next week on that, and we hope we can get this bill moving, and we hope affirmative consent can be part of our sex ed curriculum.
Democratic State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. is our guest here on WKAR's Current State. What are the laws in Michigan right now surrounding the teaching of sexual education in schools?
You know, we're better than a lot of people think. We're actually abstinence plus. So we talk about abstinence, but we're also able to include some other things in that.
We're required to talk about abstinence.
If we teach it at all.
There's
no requirement, and I would like to change this. There's no requirement that schools actually have a sex ed class. And we're working on a comprehensive review of our sex ed as well. It's just that we thought this issue was so important that we separated it out into a different discussion. Mm. So we're better off than a lot of places are, because there are a lot of places where you can only teach abstinence. And I have no problem with teaching abstinence. Abstinence is the safest answer to not getting sexually transmitted disease and avoiding teen pregnancy. But we also have to be realistic. The culture that we live in, most people aren't getting married till they're much, much older. So we need to give more tools to our kids. And in East Lansing, people were getting a lot of negative messages. They were being taught things like good girls say no, bad girls say yes, that you were like a used piece of chewing gum if you had engaged in sexual activity. We're not going to win people's hearts and minds by insulting kids and by giving them negative messages. We really need to actually give an affirmative message of it's your body, you have a right to decide what you're going to do with it, and you have a right to protect yourself as well.
Do you want sex ed to be mandatory in the state? Is that where we should be heading?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now, some critics at least, of yes means yes, affirmative consent, say that requiring a yes puts an unfair burden of proof on somebody accused of assault.
A couple things. One, we're not changing the standard of evidence by doing a bill that in the sex ed code. And you're not changing the standard of evidence if you're actually talking about other cases. Obviously, these cases are hard to prosecute. They're almost barely are. So I'm not that. I am more concerned myself about the 1 in 5 women that are being sexually assaulted on campus. That's my biggest concern. Now, I had a woman that came in my office from one of these more libertarian groups that said that the only thing worse than being raped was being falsely accused of rape. I was astonished that anyone would say that. I think that we have an epidemic going on. We need to solve it. And if they have other serious answers to this problem, they should come forward and actually give them. But so far, all I've heard is complaints that we can't do this and we can't do that. I don't think affirmative consent is that hard. If someone, it doesn't have to be a signed form, signed in triplicate. We're not saying that. All we're saying is that you have to respect your partner and make sure that they're interested in engaging in sexual activity with you before you start. And if they say no in the middle, you can't continue. Mm.
You've referred to your Republican co-sponsor, Ms. Shootmaker. Will many other Republicans be getting behind this?
I hope so. I mean, I would encourage people at home to call their legislator. I mean, obviously, you don't need to call me. We'll take your call. But to call your legislator from around the state, call the governor's office. We need to build the groundswell of support to change the culture in Michigan.
I'd like to ask you about a couple of other issues here. This week on this program, we've been discussing gun legislation and whether gun owners should be allowed to carry concealed weapons, at least in gun-free zones like schools. It's a pretty hot topic at the Capitol. Where are you on this?
Yeah, I'm strongly opposed to that. I believe in the Second Amendment, but I also believe that just like in every other part of the Constitution, there are limits. We limit free speech in certain cases, but the idea that we can never limit the Second Amendment just doesn't make sense. And you look at the Capitol building, for example, there is actually a rule that you can't bring a sign into the Capitol, but you can bring an AK-47. That just doesn't make sense. This open carry issue is ridiculous. We have people that are showing up at our schools heavily armed, causing schools to go into lockdown. Rockford, Michigan had to pay for $1 million bulletproof vestibule because they had people coming in with guns on a regular basis, open carrying, trying to prove some point on the backs of limiting our kids' education because the kids were actually in lockdown instead of actually being taught. That doesn't make sense. But the answer is not to go to concealed weapons. That won't solve the problem. I don't think guns belong in schools.
There'd be fewer lockdown situations if they were concealed, at least.
I guess you wouldn't see them. Yeah, I get that. But we also had a situation recently where there was a school fight that was trying to be broken up by a parent who had a concealed weapon, and the weapon fell out in the middle of it. These aren't trained law enforcement professionals. And when we have our kids in these situations, I don't think guns need to be introduced. And more importantly, I think, and this is an amendment that I'm going to offer to those bills, is that it should be a local control issue. East Lansing should be able to decide whether they want guns in their schools or not. And the idea that we have to have a one-size-fits-all for the entire state, to me, makes no sense. From a party, I read the Republican platform on the floor all the time. It says in the Michigan Republican platform that the government that is closest to the people is the best equipped to make decisions for the people. They violate that on a constant basis on the Senate floor. And the idea that we're going to say that Kalkaska and Detroit have to have the same policy for guns in their schools doesn't make any sense.
We've been talking with Democratic State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. of Meridian Township about the sex ed conversation that should be happening in Michigan schools and other issues. Curtis, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to do it.
And coming up on Current State, Old Town will be hosting a classical music concert tomorrow, not in any kind of concert hall, but instead in an art gallery. We'll speak with the MSU professor and founder of the Absolute Chamber Music Series about the series, bringing back the days when music concerts were way more casual. Plus, a story from our final pop-up stories of the season that took place last night at Reach Studio Art Center in Rio Town. We'll hear from Lansing artist Ruben Kenyatta. Stay tuned. It's Current State on WKAR. Don't forget you can connect with Current State on social media. We're at KAR Current State on Twitter. That's at KAR Current State on Facebook. Find us at Current State from WKAR. Well, Lansing's Old Town has hosted several musical events recently, and tomorrow night, the Absolute Gallery on East Grand River Avenue will also be hosting a soiree that's appropriately called the Absolute Music Chamber Series. I'm joined now by Jamie Paisley, who spoke with co-founder and MSU College of Music flute professor Richard Sherman. Hi, Jamie.
Hey there. It is indeed a soiree, or at least that's one of the goals that Richard Sherman set out with in creating this series at the Absolute Gallery. In fact, for tomorrow's concert, he's joined by a colleague, the MSU musicologist Kevin Bartig, to introduce the event's all-Russian program.
I started this part of the series, which would be that there'd be a concert guide who would be sort of setting the historical framework or the setting, if you like, for the music that people would hear that evening. And it was sort of the whole idea of the Absolute Music Series was patterned after this sort of soiree model where people would go out into people's homes many times or whatever it happened to be the setting, and they would play music. Sometimes they'd hear poetry. It would be high art, and people would speak, you know, if there was an oration that someone wanted to present. But I thought to try to combine the fact that it's a gallery setting with music, with people who are versed in music history, would be an amazing combination.
So, get it out of the recital hall.
Exactly, and kind of bring the music to the people, which is kind of, I wasn't really raised in a really classical music family. And for me, it was like learning to enjoy beer or wine. The more you take in something, the more you notice, and the more you notice, the more you appreciate. I was a flutist back then, of course, but I didn't sit around listening to a lot of flute records. There weren't that many prominent artists at the time. So classical music for me was an extension of my listening to folk music and, you know, indie rock even back then, if it was called that then. Fleetwood Mac, Rumours, was the big 1977 album that we all listened to. And I was just as happy listening to that stuff as anything else.
In the Absolute Music Chamber Series, flutist and co-founder Richard Sherman does his best to step back when it comes to what pieces are played, and that's by design.
Well, what I try to do is not make it like a society for the advancement of Richard Sherman and Lansing. You know, I try to be, you know, invite my friends and invite people around the state and then sometimes even beyond our borders to try to get the best classical musicians that we can into Absolute Music. And occasionally I'll play maybe no more than two concerts a season, because I found that people, you know, it becomes like a family. People know certain people regularly. But no, I don't want it just to be something that features me. So I would be very happy to have another group. Like the first concert we did was the Donald Cinta Saxophone Quartet, and I didn't play at all. I just went and enjoyed it. So this next one is three colleagues of mine from the College of Music who are playing, and they play the lion's share of the program.
That lion's share in Friday's concert is Tchaikovsky's Piano Trio, his only work in that chamber genre, and features pianist Ralph Vodopek, violinist Dmitry Berlinsky, and cellist Søren Bagratuni. But co-founder Richard Sherman will appear in the first half of that Absolute Music chamber series in Old Town with a work by another Russian, Prokofiev's Flute Sonata, which might be better known in an adaptation made by the composer for violin.
Well, I think it's always interesting when you consider that a work was conceived with a certain instrument in mind. And I read a really interesting article in which Shostakovich was quoted that he actually preferred the flute version because he thought it captured the more of the transparency and also the innocence of childhood, which I think has a lot to do with the melodies that are in this piece. I generally feel like the fiddle players can be much more athletic. Some of the stuff that's written is very angular, and the fast movements can be really fast on fiddle. And on flute, it takes a little bit more negotiating. But I think that that changes its character also, and not necessarily for the worst, I think. The very high register stuff for flute, Prokofiev's notorious for it. And for us, it becomes very brilliant and loud. Whereas when the violins play up that high in the stratosphere, it tends to be smaller and purer and thinner and, you know, so and softer. It's just not quite as loud most of the time. So there's some interesting contrast to be found in both versions.
For flutist Richard Sherman, the process of starting the Absolute Chamber Music Series was a long time coming, particularly when it came to get to know the other co-founder, the owner of the Absolute Gallery in Old Town, Kathy Holcomb.
Kathy and I had known each other since I came to Michigan State in the early 90s because she was working at a gallery called the Pandy Gallery in Okemos. I had gone into that studio because I had found an old charcoal drawing that my uncle had done of my grandmother that it was in pieces. But I just handed it off to Kathy, who was behind the counter. And when I came back to pick up whatever the framing is, she had restored that charcoal drawing completely. And so then I don't know how many years it was after that that I was down in Old Town and I wandered into her gallery, the Absolute Gallery, and she was the proprietor and she had her own place. And she never said much. She just sort of was a doer and she'd do things behind the scenes. And that's kind of still the way she is. And I would just stop in. I liked Old Town. I liked hanging out down there. I think it's kind of, you know, eclectic and hip and now and cutting edge. And I used to just go down there and hang out. And I would go over and see her, you know, because there was a jazz presence down there already. And there was a blues fest. And, you know, there were all those different things going on. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat to have a classical music presence in Old Town? And she said, oh, yeah, all we need is a piano. And one day I walked over to Marshall Music and they donated one for a series of six concerts at the time. We just threw ourselves into it. And so that's kind of how it started.
And over the years of the Absolute Concert Series, Richard Sherman's love for Old Town hasn't dissipated one bit.
It makes a really great date night. You know, I always say that it's nice to have some place to go that's not on campus. You know, a lot of things that go on here at MSU that are awesome. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to explore Lansing a little bit, and I think it's a good way to do it.
That's Richard Sherman, co-founder of the Absolute Music Chamber Series. Doors open at the Absolute Gallery on Friday at 7 p.m. for their next concert, with music by Tchaikovsky and Prokofiev. The concert itself starts at 8 p.m. You can find more information about tomorrow's concert and the rest of the Absolute Chamber Music Series online at absolutemusiclansing.org. For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.
Where am I going, baby? Without you, I'd send nowhere. What do I take with me? A heart upon my sleeve, baby. Wherever you go, I'm going to. And why do I get the feeling you feel the same way too? The way you hold my hand, a whisper that it's true.
Western and Maori on a recent Live Music Friday performance here on WKAR's Current State. It's called Wherever You Go, I'm Going To. Western and Maori. Tomorrow, another Live Music Friday, singer-songwriter Matt Blyton joins us in Studio S to play a few songs from his latest CD called New Morning. It's Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. A big thank you to everyone who came out to Reach Studio Arts Center last evening for Current State's final pop-up stories event this fall. The theme for storytellers was Create and Destroy, in keeping with the venue. And we heard some great stories last night. Ruben Kenyatta is a fine artist in the Lansing area, and he told the story of the very first work of art he created.
It took place, unfortunately, right after I got out to service. I was about as bright as a sun, ray of sun. And unfortunately, though, an incident happened to me where I ended up getting convicted and, of course, sent to prison. But the situation was is that my parents had wasted all their money on this. And as a first offender, I ended up getting 5 to 20 years in prison. It wasn't just probation or any of that. But after that, I was sentenced to the world's largest wall prison, which was Jackson at the time. It held 3,000 people, and I was 20 years old. So you can imagine the fright that I had in going into a situation where you had all the doors slamming and people yelling and so forth. However, I survived that part. I ended up, of course, bored, because all you do is sit in a cell all day, for the most part, when you first go in. However, I found an interest and a person that was actually painting. He had been there for a while, and he was painting. And of course, I couldn't basically go up and ask him, say, hey, you know, could you show me how to paint, or can I watch you paint? So eventually, once the opportunity came, I was able to get a friend to introduce me, whereas the only thing you could do back then, because things were pretty coded up, in other words, you had to conduct yourself in a particular way in order to stay safe. And so all I did was basically watched him. So once I had the opportunity to save up some money from an institution job I had started working, I ended up buying some paint off a person in the streets, you might say. You know, in other words, it wasn't from the store, but some people had some extra paint. And the three colors that I had was black, white, and green, because that's all I could afford. And, you know, because I had to get canvas and medium to go with it. And institution jobs at the time paid like maybe 40 cents a day. And in doing so, I decided to try to make this great masterpiece. Even though I like to do realistic art at the time, I decided to do an abstract because I didn't want to reap the criticism of my homies talking about how bad it was. So I did an abstract first. And so I did this beautiful abstract to me. I mean, it was really heartfelt. My ego was big as this room. I mean, I was really into the thick of things. And so that very night that I had did this painting, I had set it on the side and basically fell asleep watching it because I was so proud of this. And the next day I woke up. First thing I did, of course, rushed over, brushed my teeth, washed my face, getting ready to go out and show this to my homeboys and show them just, hey, I got some work, you know, I got some self-work. So I went out and reached over to get the painting. I looked at the painting, and I saw it's been scarred all over, lines everywhere inside the painting. I said, oh my God, somebody has destroyed my work. And so the first thing I thought, I said, maybe somebody's testing me. And so in Jackson, or in prison at that time, when that happened, that means it's war, basically. You're going to have to do something about it, or you're going to be you're going to be soft the rest of the time that you're there. And so I'm sitting there, I say, oh, man. And I didn't want to do this because, like I say, I wanted to leave. I didn't want to get in any trouble. And so I'm sitting there with my head down, thinking, I'm saying, wow, what can I do? Who could have done this? You know, because you got to figure out who did it first. But in the process of doing it, with my head hung down, depressed, and I looked across the floor, and I saw this roach run past me. Now, roaches are pretty common, you know, in prison. But except for this roach caught my attention because it was actually green and white. You know, and I said, and then I looked around, I saw more of them. Some was black and white, some green and black. And then it hit me, I said, wow, the roaches did it. You know, and I said, look, and I mean, it's like, I don't know if you all know, but you know, once they eat the paint itself, they're actually translucent. And in so doing so, that, like I say, that was my destruction of my great masterpiece and also my big ego I had acquired in doing it. And I guess the end of the story would turn out well because the Michigan Appeals Court actually overturned the conviction and I was released back to the street. And now it's the end. Right.
And we want to remind you, Pop-Up Stories is a collaboration between Current State, the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities at Michigan State, as well as other community partners. You can keep up with our ongoing project and keep an eye out for future storytelling events by liking it on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/popupstorieslansing. And that's our program for today. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, Michigan legislators are debating whether certain gun owners should be able to carry concealed guns in gun-free zones. Sounds confusing? We'll try to straighten it out. Earlier this week, we heard from one Michigan public school superintendent who supports concealed carry in schools. Friday, we'll hear from the superintendent of Sault Ste. Marie Public Schools, Timothy Hall, who is a gun owner but opposes letting gun owners carry concealed weapons in Michigan schools. Plus, it's another Live Music Friday here on Current State. We'll be joined here in Studio S by singer-songwriter Matt Blyton, and we'll talk about his latest CD, New Morning. Don't forget, we're a podcast as well. Download it on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Peter Worf is the executive producer of our program. April Van Buren directed our show today. Thanks as well to Scott Pohl, Melissa Benmark, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, Katie Cook, and Drew Hill. We hope to see you tomorrow. I'm Mark Bayshore. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR.